have the privilege of being able to come together and share from the Word of God. What a privilege that is. The Ten Commandments. Howard and I, we were talking about this, and we were talking a little bit about how to divide them out. And I said, well, those first three really tie together a lot. But as I started studying, most commentators put the first four together and include the Sabbath day with it. But I'll let that for somebody else. And I think we have plenty to deal with the first three here this evening. But one thing I came across that was interesting, tradition has it, remember, God wrote the Ten Commandments on two tables of stone. And tradition has it that the first four were on one table and the other six were on the other table. I thought that was interesting. We don't know for sure. But wouldn't it be wonderful to see? Now, of course, the first set was broken, but he gave a second set. And I have to wonder, will we see that someday? I don't know. It'd be interesting to see that. But wouldn't it be amazing to look at a set of stones that were written by the finger of God? I mean, just stop and think about that. How amazing that would be to do that. Now, I want us to get the setting of the Ten Commandments. I like to get the setting of something so we get the background a little bit, and I think it helps us to get into it and make a little more sense of it. Let's go to chapter 19. Now the Ten Commandments are found in Exodus 20, but I'm going to back up to 19. I'm going to read chapter 19 and part of 20, just to get us all in the same thing. And notice that the very first thing says, in the third month. So this is in the third month after the children of Israel come out of Egypt. And God is getting them ready to be a nation. At this point, the plan was for them to just come out and do this, be there a short time and go into the land. But that didn't happen. Of course, God knew that, but as far as the children of Israel knew, they were to be in the land in a few months. And not really take that long. Instead, it took 40 years. In the third month, when the children of Israel were gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mount. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. And these are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, All that the Lord has spoken, we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, Lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with thee, and believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. And be ready against the third day, for the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, Take heed to yourselves that ye go not up into the mount or touch the border of it. Whoso toucheth the mount shall surely be put to death, and there shall not an hand touch it, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through, whether it be beast or man, it shall not live. And when the trumpet soundeth long, they shall come up to the mount. And Moses went down from the mount unto the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said unto the people, Be ready against the third day, come not at your wives. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and thick clouds upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the nether, or the lower part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai at the top of the mount, and the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount, and Moses went up. And the Lord said unto Moses, Go down, charge the people, lest they break through unto the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. And Moses said unto the Lord, Well, the people cannot come up to the Mount Sinai, for thou chargest us, saying, Set bounds about the mount and sanctify it. And the Lord said unto him, Away, get thee down, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron with thee. But let not the priests and the people break through to come up unto the Lord, lest he break forth upon them. So Moses went down unto the people and spake unto them. And God spake, now we get into the Ten Commandments themselves. And God spake all these words, saying, I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me, number one. Number two, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto the thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Number three, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. Number four, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. For in it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Number five, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Number six, thou shalt not kill. Number seven, thou shalt not commit adultery. Number eight, thou shalt not steal. Number nine, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. And number ten, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And it goes on and says some more, but I think we'll stop there. So we have there the setting of, boy, you know, you stop and think of all that went on. Now, the Ten Commandments, a couple of things here I want to say before I get into the actual commandments. Did God invent these right here on the spot? Is this where God invent? I use the word invent. I'm not sure if that's a good word, but is this where these things began? I don't think so. I think God is taking and putting together things that already were. The Sabbath day, for example, was already established, right? And not killing, and you know, back in Genesis already, and that's what I kind of think that he took what already was and put it in this form. Another thing is, you hear the question, are the Ten Commandments still for today? That's a common question that people ask. And I'm not going to spend much time on that at all here this evening. That's not my goal tonight. But I'll just say this. Any sin that you can think of, breaks one of the Ten Commandments. Remember, Jesus said, when you break one, you're guilty of all. But any sin breaks one of the Ten Commandments. So, if you want to ask the question, is the Ten Commandments for today, you have to answer the question, can we just go ahead and sin? It doesn't matter. So, answer that question. And I guess that kind of tells us, doesn't it? But at the same time, we realize that our goal is not just to keep the Ten Commandments. That's not our goal as believers. Appreciate Harold's message this morning on who we are. And our goal is to live above the Ten Commandments and live out of a love for our Lord and serve Him. But at the same time, it's there. It instructs us. It's called a schoolmaster. It shows us what sin is. But we don't live just focused on, focus. That's not our main focus. Our main focus is serving the Lord and so on. But it does tell us what sin is. All right. The first two verses here in chapter 20 are an introduction. And the very first verse there says, and God spake all these words, saying. Now, I kind of read over that, and I don't really, stop and think about that too much. But when we read chapter 19, we realize you get a little sense of when he spoke those words, you get a little sense of what was involved. And let's go over to Deuteronomy. I'm going to be turning to some other passages. Let's go over to Deuteronomy. Interesting how in the last while, I've been in Deuteronomy a lot. Our Sunday school lessons have been coming from Deuteronomy. And I got into this and I thought, I'm spending a lot of time in Deuteronomy. Go to Deuteronomy 5, verse 22. Now, remember, the book of Deuteronomy, Moses is rehearsing and giving instructions at the end of the 40 years. That's when Deuteronomy is written, toward the end of the 40 years before the children of Israel goes into the land of Egypt, before Moses dies and goes in. And so a lot of this, he's rehearsing of what took place. And that's what he's doing here in chapter 5:22. And he gives some details that we don't see in Exodus 20. All right, notice these words, Deuteronomy 5:22. These words the Lord spake unto all your assembly in the mount, out of the midst of the fire and of the cloud and of the thick darkness, with a great voice. Now we've seen some of that over there in chapter 19. With a great voice, and he added no more. I've just caught that, and he added no more. In other words, I'm not sure what all that means, but he wrote them in two tablets of stone and delivered them unto me. And it came to pass, when ye heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness, for the mountain did burn with fire, that ye came near unto me, even all the heads of your tribes and your elders, and ye said, see, Moses is saying, now this is what you did back there 40 years ago, or roughly 40 years ago, and ye said, behold, the Lord our God has showed us his glory and his greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the midst of the fire, and we have seen this day that God doth talk with man, and he lives. I mean, we're still living. Now, therefore, why should we die? I mean, you might say, hearing the voice of God scared them. They were frightened. Said, now, therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any more, then we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that has heard the voice of the living God speak out of the midst of the fire as we have and lived? Go thou near, they're talking to Moses now, go thou near and hear all that the Lord our God shall say, and speak thou unto us all that the Lord our God shall speak unto thee, and we will hear it and do it. In other words, Moses, you go hear what God has to say. What do you think the Lord thought of that? We see it in verse 28. And the Lord heard the voice of your words when ye spake unto me. And the Lord said unto me, I have heard the voice of the words of this people which they have spoken unto thee. They have well said all that they have spoken. God commended them for it. That's good. That was good. And then I'm going to read 29 yet. Oh, and this is what God is saying. Oh, that there were such a heart in them, that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever. Catch that last phrase? Oh, that they would do it, that it would be well with them. Just see the heart of God? How he cares for his people. You know, God doesn't want us to obey his commandments just because, well, I've decided that's what you need to do. But he knows that's what we need. He knows if we're going to live happy and satisfied lives, it's only going to be through the way that he wants us to do it. And I think we'll see maybe a little more of that later. But, you know, sometimes we hear people say, oh, I just wish God would talk to me. Then I would really know. Maybe we ought to be a little careful what we wish for. Did you ever think about that? What if God came to us like he did to the children of Israel? And would we be frightened? And would we say, Lynn, you go, you know, you go do it. You know, I'm thankful. The thought came to me. Now, I don't know if I ever thought about this before, but the thought came to me. You know, God gives us his word. He came to us. He wrote these things down and gave them to us. That's actually the mercy of God, isn't it? You think about that. That's actually the mercy of God, that he gave us, he gave what he wants us, he gave these things, he wrote them down and gave them to us. If he would always come in person and do it, you know, we might be consumed. So I don't know, it was just a thought, but also with that thought, I had to think, what is the ultimate word? Jesus. He's referred to as the Word. See, he reveals God. And I'm so glad that Jesus has come and that he shows us the Father. Jesus said, you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And so I'm glad that we can come. And that, I think that's one of the reasons. We can only come to the Father through our Lord Jesus. That protects us from that wrath, from the holiness and so on of God. The blood of Jesus that does that. So, praise the Lord for that. All right. Now, verse 2 says, I am the Lord. I am the Lord. Thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. And I had to think, I am. You remember when this all started? Go back to Exodus chapter 3, when Moses was out there in the wilderness, and he went to that burning bush, and God talked to him there, and Moses says, well, what do I tell him your name is? He says, my name is I Am. I am that I am. And that's something you can chew on for a long time. But that's a deep, deep name. So, but I just thought of that. He says, now I want to remind you, I am. I am the Lord. I brought you out of Egypt. And that gave him the authority to give these commandments to these people. All right. Now let's get into the very first one themselves. The first one, of course, and it's interesting when he gives them. Some of them are only one verse, and some of them are several verses. Number 3, I think, is about the longest of the explanation. But the first one says, just one verse, thou shalt have no other gods before me. No other gods before me. Now, some think that that means that you know, as long as God is number one, then any other gods are okay. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying, I want to be the one and only God. See? I want to be one and only. I don't want to be the greatest among many. I just want to be the one and only God. There's a term that is used, and I think I'm saying this term right, syncretism. I don't know if you're familiar with that word at all, but it's a word I come across sometimes. It's spelled S-Y-N-C-R-E-T-I-S-M, syncretism. And it's the idea that you can take all kinds of religions and mix them together and find your way to God. And that's a very popular thing today. A lot of people... you know, they feel like you can mix your religions together, kind of pick and choose, like a smorgasbord, and just pick and choose what you want, and you will find your way to God. But God is saying here, no, just one, and I am the only one. And Adam Clark, as a commentary, pretty well-known commentary, been around for a long time, his book. But he had a quote. It's not very long, but I'm going to try to read this. And he had a quote on this commandment that I thought was interesting. And I'll try to read it where we can follow it. He says, this commandment prohibits every kind of mental idolatry and all inordinate attachment to earthly and sensible things. Since God is the fountain of happiness, and no intelligent creature can be happy but through him, whoever seeks happiness in the creature is necessarily an idolater, since he puts the creature in the place of the Creator, expecting that from the gratification of his passions in the use or abuse of earthly things, which is to be found in God alone. The very first commandment of the whole series is divinely calculated to prevent man's misery and promote his happiness by taking him away from all false dependence and leading him to God Himself, the fountain of all good. Now, I'm going to read that last sentence, just that last sentence again, because I think it kind of sums up what he's saying. The very first commandment of the whole series is divinely calculated to prevent man's misery and promote his happiness. Do you think of God promoting your happiness? Sure. By taking him away from all false dependence and leading him to God Himself, the fountain of all good. And so that's why God says that you shall have no other gods before me. You, no other gods. I want to be your only God. And so that's foundational. It's foundational to the Ten Commandments. Okay, now we get into this number two. We get into, he you might say in a sense he expands on this a little bit more. But now in number two, he says, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. And we'll read the other maybe a little later. But now we get into something that can be a little bit more controversial. But the children of Israel, well, I might say this. Yeah, the children of Israel lived in a culture, they had just come out of a culture that was full of graven images, full of idol worship. Actually, I think most of the world at that time would have been involved in idol worship, where people took and from their imaginations, they made gods. You know, there's something within us that wants to worship. The way that we are created, and people can kind of scoff at that, but we are all made to worship. And the people that scoff the loudest do the most worshiping because they're worshiping themselves. So we ultimately worship something. But God is saying, I don't want you to make any kind of likeness of me. Now, why is that? Why is that? Well, I might just say this. They were very familiar with this. Egypt was full of it. Where do you think they got the idea? You remember when Moses didn't come back in time and they made a golden calf? Where do you think they got that idea? From Egypt. That was something that they come from Egypt. The plagues, those plagues in Egypt, that's quite a study, but those plagues were against the gods of Egypt. And even Pharaoh was considered a god. That was just something that was just very, very prevalent in all cultures. Now, again, let's go to Deuteronomy and chapter 4. Here's something that's interesting. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 15. Well, maybe I'll read 14 to get the setting there. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 14. And the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments that ye might do them in the land whether ye go to possess it. Now, Verse 15, take ye therefore good heed unto yourselves. And this is what Moses is telling them. For ye saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire, lest ye corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image, the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any beast that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged fowl that flieth in the air, the likeness of anything that creepeth on the ground, the likeness of any fish that is in the waters beneath the earth. And lest thou lift up thine eyes unto heaven, and when thou seest the sun and the moon and the stars, even all the host of heaven, shouldest be driven to worship them and serve them, which the Lord thy God hath divided unto all nations under the whole heaven. But the Lord hath taken you and brought you forth out of the iron furnace, even out of Egypt, to be unto me a people of inheritance, as ye are this day. So, it was intentional that when God came down on that mountain, that they did not see any similitude of God. That was intentional. And I think we see here why. Now, Moses did. But we don't see anything that Moses did as far as trying to, you know, make something like it. The reason I believe that God did not let them see himself, one of the reasons that he did not let him see himself was so that they would not try and make something that resembled that. Can't you imagine? If they would have seen something, sure enough, the next day somebody would have carved something that this is, see, here's what God is. See? It seems like we're always trying to take God and put him down to where we can control him. You see, you think about that? Wouldn't you like to control God? You know, we want God to do what we want to do. See? And I think that's part of that thing of that idol worship. Let me say it this way. Anything that was made to resemble God, would it do it? No. No. They would have seen just a little bit. Remember that story? I should have looked that up. Remember that story about the blind man that wanted him to describe an elephant? And he walked around and touched one of the legs and he said, well, an elephant must be like a tree. And that would be a little bit like we are with God. So any kind of similitude, any kind of image that we would make would not be accurate. There's nothing we could make that would be accurate. And so God is saying, don't make any kind of image of me. Now let's go over to Psalm 115. Psalm 115. I'm going to read the first 8 verses in that. Psalm 115. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory for thy mercy and for thy truth's sake. I wish it'd be interesting to read this in another translation. Wherefore should the heathen say, where is now their God? You see, David, or the psalmist is saying, why should the heathen say to us, we see our gods, we have gods, but where's yours? We don't see any God. And his response to that is, but our God is in the heavens. See, we don't have something here. We don't have something here that we can lay our eyes on and say, well, this is God. See, or this is how God is. But our God is in the heavens. He hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Now notice, he says their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. They have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes have they, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses have they, but they smell not. They have hands, but they handle not. Feet have they, but they walk not. Neither speak they through their throat. Now, notice verse 8. This is really interesting. They that make them are like unto them, so is everyone that trusteth in them. That's interesting. Think about that. You become like your idol. You become like your idol. And when people had idols that were cruel and so on, they became that way. But you just think about that. God does not want us to make an image of Him because it's limited. It's not going to do justice. And He wants us, I came across this phrase in one of the commentaries, I don't remember which one, but I thought it was good. He says, we are to be a people of faith, not imagination. And I thought that was interesting. We are to be a people of faith, not imagination. And so our faith in God is because of His qualities, His attributes, all those things. Not our faith in God isn't dependent upon, does He look like an old grandfather, or does He, you know, what is He? See? But our faith in God is in those things. And so we need to believe what the Bible, what the Word tells us about God. And we accept those things by faith. Now, some practical applications. Some people feel, and we need to respect this, some people feel like, they take this to even say, well, don't take any pictures of me because that's making an image and so on. And we're all familiar with that, and we should respect it, their conscience and so on. But other Christians go to the other extreme and make all kinds of statues and all kinds of images and so on to say, well, this reminds us of God. Well, I don't think we should do that either. Actually, this was one of the controversies back in the Reformation. The Catholic Church, of course, had a lot of statues and images and all this kind of thing. And that was one thing especially the Reformed Church, when they started, they did not have any of that in their churches. And they rejected that. And they were very strong in it. I'm not sure where all that is today, but that was one of those big things that, and I think the Lutheran might have done the same thing. I'm not sure, but I remember the Reformed Church were very strong on not having any images in their churches, and it was a very strong reaction against the Catholic Church. So I had to ask the question: what about the pictures of Jesus? We've all seen them, is that an image? Is that what this is talking about? And here again, I'm not going to be critical in that, but we need to stop and think a little bit. Stop and think about this. When we think of Jesus, what do we think? in my mind, what kind of picture do I think of Jesus? Do I think about him as that man traveling the roads of Israel, Palestine, working the miracles and so on? Bible says he had, it sounded like he was not an outstanding looking man. He was just a common, ordinary man. Is that what I think of? If I do, is that accurate? Is that an accurate picture of Jesus? What about when you get into or after the resurrection? Is that the Jesus we serve today? And then what about going into Revelation chapter 1? You remember when John hears a voice and he turns around and he sees Jesus? I'm not going to go and read all those descriptions, but there's a number of descriptions there about Jesus. Had a sword coming out of his mouth and you know. And what about you get over to about chapter 5 and you see this lamb that was slain. The lamb that was slain and he had seven horns and seven eyes. That was Jesus. What about Jesus when it talks about him riding that white horse, coming with his saints? So, I think we need to be a little careful in that, and I don't know, something for you to think about. Think about the qualities. Think about the power, the holiness, the righteousness, and his love, and all of those things. And I don't think it's important that we form a mental image, but it's so easy to do. It just seems like it's natural for us to want to do that. And 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7 says, "We walk by faith, not by sight." And God says without faith it's not possible to please him. Faith is so important in this. Well, let's read. Let's go back now to Exodus 20. And let's read what else he says, because God reveals some more of himself here to us. Not make any graven image or the likeness of anything. He gets down into verse 5. He says, "Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them nor serve them. For I, the Lord, am a jealous God." So not only is he given a prohibition here, but he's also revealing some things about himself. He says, "I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me." And by the way, that was something later on that was changed. That's a whole nother subject. But you get over to Ezekiel and you'll see that was changed. And then verse 6, "And showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments." But I like that. He says he visits the iniquity unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, but showing mercy unto thousands. Isn't that wonderful? See how much greater his mercy is. "Of those that love me and keep my commandments." So there we see some more about God. Okay, let's go to the third one now. And here he says, this again is just one verse. "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain." Now, right away we usually think of cursing and swearing. And profanity. And that definitely is part of this. It hurts. Sometimes you hear people using the name of Jesus and the name of God and just so carelessly and in such a profane way. And it just, you just cringe when you hear that. It seems like some people almost when they open their mouth, they curse. Sometimes we can be tempted to do that when something unexpected happens to us. Maybe we hit our thumb with a hammer or if it's not there, then it usually won't come out as easy. Just make sure that it's, those things aren't there. But so that is something that's really, really a part of this whole thing. Over in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus says every idle word is going to be brought into judgment. We're going to have to give an account of every idle word. And so be careful. We need to be careful of the things that we say. And we call them bywords. Well, I think we need to be careful of those. Now, there's another aspect to this commandment that we don't always think about. And this has to do with the taking of oath. Oath. O-A-T-H. We don't always stop and think about that this commandment is also talking about oaths. Now, what is an oath? An oath is, it's making a statement or a promise and invoking God or some other deity in giving that statement or promise, making it authentic, making it true. Now, the classic, and we're all probably familiar with this, and that is in our court system. In our court, you go into court and you testify or you speak. Before you speak in court, they put you under an oath. And something like this. They say, do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth? Or do you swear? Some of you use the word swear. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And sometimes they even have you put your hand on a Bible when you do that. People are to respond, I do. Well, that's taking an oath. You're invoking that you're going to speak, and God is my witness that I am going to speak the truth. And so help me God. Is that something new? No. Actually, I believe that kind of thing is taken right out of, pretty much out of the Old Testament. And because there was oaths already there. Go to Numbers 30. Let's go to Numbers, first of all. Numbers chapter 30. And we're going to see both of these aspects of this commandment. Numbers 30, verse 2. Verse 1 just says that Moses spake unto the heads of the tribe concerning the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. If a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. And then it goes on and talks about vows and so on. If a woman and makes a vow and a man makes a vow. And but it's this whole thing of making a vow and taking an oath. Now, the thing in this third commandment was that when you make an oath, you keep it. That's the emphasis on, so going back here to Exodus chapter 20, it's saying there in verse 7, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. In other words, you're using the name of God in an oath. Do not take that in vain. You keep your word. That it's not just profanity and so on that it's talking about here. But it's keeping your word that's involved. Now, oaths were very common in the Old Testament. Go to Ruth. I'm going to just look at two. Actually, I came across this oath, variations of this oath. I think it was around 10 times, but I'm not going to look at all those. Ruth, just before 1 Samuel. Ruth chapter 1. This is an example of an oath. Verse 16. Remember, this is where Ruth, where she pledges to go back with Naomi. Notice what she says. And Ruth said, we're in Ruth 1:16. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee. Excuse me. Entreat me not to leave thee or return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and where there will I be buried. Now, notice this. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. She was taking an oath. She was taking an oath. That was an oath. That was kind of a common phrase. Now, go over to 1 Samuel, the next book, and 20. Actually, there's a couple of them in 1 Samuel, but 1 Samuel chapter 20. And this is Jonathan talking to David. 1 Samuel 20, verse 11. And Jonathan said unto David, come, and let us go out into the field. And they went out, both of them, into the field. And Jonathan said unto David, O Lord God of Israel, when I have sounded my father about tomorrow, any time, or the third day, and behold, if there be good toward David, and I send not unto thee, and show it thee, the Lord do so, and much more to Jonathan. See? He said, if I don't keep my word here, the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan, to me. That he was taking an oath. And this commandment, this third commandment is saying, you shall not take the name of God in vain. See? If you take an oath and you use my name, you keep that oath. See? So, that's a part of this commandment. We don't always stop and think about that in this commandment. It's not just profanity and using God's name carelessly, but it's keeping our word. Now, let's go over to Matthew chapter 5. We get over to Matthew chapter 5. And we all know that as the Sermon on the Mount. And something that's interesting in Matthew chapter 5, and I think maybe in some of the others, but especially Matthew chapter 5, there's a number of things that Jesus said, ye have heard that it's been said of old time, but I say unto you. And study that. It's interesting how that the Christian church has dealt with that, a lot of those today. But I'm not going to go there. Go to verse 33. Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself. Does somebody have another translation? You have that in another translation, that forswear. What is... Do you have it, Steve? Verse 33. Read out loud so everybody can hear verse 33. Okay. So this is referring to that third commandment. See? You don't swear falsely. And So Jesus is now dealing with this third commandment. He's going to change it. By the way, did he have a right to do that? Why? He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he's God. So he wrote it in the first place. He has a right to change it. Okay. Now, verse 34. But I say unto you, notice now, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. Steve, read verse 37 there, would you? Yeah, 37.
Let what you say be simple, yes or no. Anything more than this comes from you.
Yeah, okay. See? Just let your yes be yes and your no, no. Isn't that interesting? Jesus takes this commandment and he says, now, profanity and that sort of thing is still wrong. That he doesn't change that. He doesn't change that at all, being careless with the name of God. But he is saying, don't take an oath. I think it's clear. Don't take an oath. He says you shouldn't take an oath. He says just let what you say is yes, and no is no. He said more than that is evil. Now people debate that and say, well, that doesn't count for legal things and so on. But I don't know. I've taken it that's what it means. So swear not at all. And go ahead.
The ESV would say, do not take an oath at all.
Okay. That says it just plainly, doesn't it? All right. Thank you. So that's what Jesus teaches. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful that in our court system and our legal documents that we have to sign at times. Sometimes at the bottom it says, do you swear that these things are true? And you can just simply cross out that swear and just say, I affirm. And you go into court, they ask that question to you, just say, I affirm. And they understand that, and that's well accepted. Matter of fact, sometimes they will say, do you swear or affirm? Sometimes in taking those oaths. Jesus wants us, he just wants us to always speak the truth. We don't have to say, I just swear that I'm going to tell the truth now. No, we always speak the truth. I don't know, it's just interesting to see that. Are there any questions? Getting time to close here. Any questions on anything? Any thoughts? Harold? Okay. Anybody have a comment on that? I think that, for one thing, nobody has kept these commandments completely. Well, I think probably just the fact that I guess the one commandment he didn't keep. I mean, I guess Jesus. I guess this just pops into my mind. You know, right away, he didn't keep the commandment that of putting God first. So he broke that commandment right away. And maybe Jesus was, letting him see that right away he didn't keep the first one. So Maybe didn't keep any of them perfectly. You have a thought on that? But if let me just counter with this. If we kept them perfectly, there would be no need of salvation. Wouldn't that be?
Yeah, I thought about some of that.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
Yeah. God gave them. And if in giving them they would have provided salvation, then he never would have had to have planned for the world.
Yeah, if they would have kept them, yeah, perfectly, yeah. Well, I come across something in the study of Romans lately. There's a term in there called the righteousness of the law. And I think it was people like that. There were some people that did that. But even then, you know, we know that, but they kept the spirit of the law. I think it was the idea. They kept the spirit of the law. And that was a lot different than just trying to keep the actual commandments and saying, well, I've got that, you know, I have to do that. So, yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Okay.
It's interesting to me because Dr. Caroline Lee, a neuroscientist, says that our decisions actually change our DNA, and that carries to third and fourth generations.
So I can blame my great great grandfather. Lynn and I meet back here one place, so Lynn, we got good excuses here. So that's interesting. Yeah. So, all right. Anyone else? Well, thank you for coming, and I trust that you know, if nothing else, just study the Word, and get into these things, and read them. And say, Lord, what do you want me to learn from them? And just get in and study. So let's stand together for closing prayer.
Would you pray specifically for Marcus?
Okay, let's pray for Marcus. All right, thank you.
Pray for a brother named Rafi in Syria.
Rafi?
Rafi.
Rafi?